You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Shauna Game.
I'm Joe Saul-Sehy, and you're listening to a special edition of
the Earn and Invest podcast.
. 2023 has been a tumultuous year in more ways than one. Still coming off the waves of the pandemic economy and trying to adjust to a virtual world where job security seems tenuous, we have been confronted by turmoil, both economic and otherwise. Bank failures, Fed rate hikes, inflation, advance worries about the next presidential election. The topics are various and have enthralled us all year long. Today, we take a look back. What are some of the biggest financial headlines of 2023? To help me with this weighty topic, we welcome Joe Saul-Sehy and Shauna Game. Shauna Game is a certified financial planner on a mission to revolutionize how millennials and really everyone thinks, acts, and feels about their finances. She's the host of the universally popular and top-ranked iTunes podcast, Everyone's Talking Money. Joe Saul-Sehy is the creator and co-owner of the Stacking Benjamins podcast, also known as the greatest money show on earth. He's the author of Stacked, Your Super Serious Guide to Modern Money Management. Joel and Shauna, welcome to Earn and Invest. Joe, we were kind of just joking before we got started that you had a long list. Was 2023 a particularly newsworthy year when it comes to personal finance?
It felt for me a little monochrome for the most part. I don't know. I'm curious to see if Shauna thinks the same. But I felt like there were just a couple of themes that just kept rearing their ugly head over and over and over throughout the year. Different than most years when we've done these, Doc, when, you know, we can say, hey, in January this happened, and in April we were surprised when this happened. It just felt like the same dragon kept coming back.
Interesting, Shauna. Monochrome, what do you think? Was this a particularly varied year? Did it seem like Joe was saying that we just kind of kept hitting the same themes?
Yeah, I think that was my takeaway from this year too, is like we kept hearing the same things over and over again. And I think a lot of listeners on my show kept sending in questions about the same things. Like, should I be worried about this again? This is happening again. And there was like a place of complacency at some, you know, point in time. I mean, I know we'll probably talk about rate hikes. And I think, you know, after a while, people were just like, okay, I mean, I guess here's another rate hike, you know? So I would agree. I think it was kind of the same messages over and over and over again.
Joe, that brings kind of a bigger question. The same as it ever was phenomena. I mean, it seems like year in, year out, we have these conversations. Are we just repeating ourselves over and over again?
You know, I think we need to, though, because I think it's the current stories that bring us back to the time proven truths, right? There's not that many new ideas in finance. And whenever there are, I've been doing this long enough, you guys have been doing this long enough, that you kind of roll your eyes and somebody's like, oh no, this is the new thing, right? And then you're like, yeah, okay, whatever. And then the new thing's gone. I mean, we were joking with somebody last week about how long has it been since you've heard the phrase diamond hands? But a couple of years ago, that's all you heard was diamond hands, right?
And I don't even remember gone. What that is anymore.
I believe that was the whole GameStop Bitcoin time, you know, all this.
Yeah, to the moon. To the moon.
Yeah, to the moon. Taking it to the moon. People cashing their whole 401k and going to the moon.
So, Shauna, I've asked this a few times, but are we wasting our time then? I mean, we spend all this time talking about current events, and it seems like either the same things keep on coming up or this crazy stuff comes up and never rears its head again. Should we put our head in the sand and not pay attention?
I mean, that would be certainly the easier way to do things, right? But I don't think that that helps any of us. You know, I think one of the things that I know that we all echo about money, one of the messages that we keep talking about is this idea that we have to talk about money. It's how, why I name my show what I named it. And so I think, you know, talking about these current events, although they might seem like, okay, here we go again, we're talking about the same thing over and over again, I think it's just a good way to open the door to conversations about money and help people, you know, figure out what they need to pay attention to and what is just kind of background noise, you know, that's happening, because there is a lot of noise. You know, we talk about money. There's a lot of trends and things that come and a lot of things that people should probably just put blindfolders on. But I think a lot of the things we'll talk about today are, you know, things we need to at least understand and have a frame of reference of how they impact us, you know, day to day.
Joe, I feel like, especially here on Earn and Invest, we tend to get really philosophical. One of the reasons I like talking about the current events is it allows us to take the philosophy and bring it towards modern day practice. It helps us get out of our heads and actually maybe discuss why this stuff is important to us today, not just philosophically kind of discussing where we should be mentally.
Oh, no. You know, what's funny is how often this occurs. We see something in the popular press and we go, oh, that's a great reminder of this long hidden truth, right? And I'll give you the first example. January 1st of this year, actor Jeremy Renner was in a horrific accident with a snowplow. And so when I went looking at like what happened in 2023, I forgot that was January 1st. So for people that don't know him, he's, you know, one of the Avengers in the Marvel Universe. He was famously in the Hurt Locker. I think he might have won the Academy Award. That movie won a lot of Academy Awards. So he's this great actor with a phenomenal career, cut short right. I mean, people could say he's at the peak of his career. And it's this reminder that we're not promised tomorrow, which, Doc, goes back to your philosophy point, right? We're not promised tomorrow. And then second, what's the insurance everybody needs but nobody ever wants to buy? Disability coverage. Disability coverage is the one. When I was a practicing financial planner, everybody's like, no, I'm a safe skier. Well, it's not about you, right? And then things, weird things happen. If you look into what happened with the snowplow accident, it was the weirdest, strangest thing that happened that derailed everything for him. And that was January 1st of last year.
So Jeremy Renner did not make my list, but I am going to talk about what I believe were the 7 biggest financial stories / headlines of 2023. Headline 1, don't worry, your money is perfectly safe in the bank. You're laughing already. In 2023, we witnessed the 3 largest bank collapses in U.S. history. The rise of interest rates contributed to the fall of Silicon Valley Bank on March 10th and Signature Bank on March 12th. Depositors' faith in the banking system was shaken, and then the contagion spread as far as the EU, where Credit Suisse collapsed and was bought by competitor UBS Group on March 19th. The crisis left First Republic Bank tottering, and a fusion of $30 billion in April bought it some time, but it fell on May 1st and was sold to JP Morgan Chase in the 2nd biggest bank failure in American history. Shauna, what do banks failing mean to your average consumer? What does that mean to you and I?
Wow. You know, I was thinking back to when you're just describing that. I was thinking back to when COVID came out, and, you know, they were saying, it's going to be 2 weeks. Like, we're all going to shut down for 2 weeks and then everything will be fine. And I remember thinking, like, there is no way here in the United States, like, we're going to shut down for 2 weeks. Like, this is not happening. And of course, we all know
max.
We all know how that story unfolded. So, you know, when you're talking about bank failures, I think, you know, people, just average people, right? We put our money in our bank and we expect that our money is going to be there. We don't even think about the process that happens behind the scenes of our money, or the fact that our money isn't even held in the bank, right? We could kind of go on and on about that. But I think for the average person, we don't question things like, you know, is the money I put in my bank safe? Will it be there when I need it? And so I think headlines like this, it really kind of shakes the foundation of people's kind of core beliefs about, will my money be there? Am I making the right decisions? You know, I get questions all the time about, what is the best safe bank for me to put my money in. And I'm like, wow, well, if you could tell me that, that would be really great, because I would love that answer. And so, you know, I think these stories and these headlines are just a reaffirmation of questioning everything about money. You know, people already have this fear around money and every decision they make. And the last thing they want to think about is, you know, is their money safe in the bank? And will this happen to them? And the question is, we don't know. You know, we don't know. I think that's what this showed, is we don't know. And we don't know the ripple effects that this will have.
Well, and this is one of those times, I think, Shauna, where name brand actually mattered. You know, when Silicon Valley Bank, if somebody went there because they just saw they had a great promotion or a great rate, and they didn't know the background of that bank, the type of businesses they were involved in, which is clearly around the run on that bank, is who their primary customer was, then somebody could have had grandma's money swept up in this horrible debacle. It just reminds me very much, you know, history repeats itself. That's where we started this whole conversation. I just remember when Robinhood came on the scene, and you look at all the mistakes Robinhood's made along the way. Robinhood continued to gain market share, and yet Robinhood, steal from the rich and give to the poor, it was steal from everybody and put the money in their pocket. And they were making mistakes that were either they didn't know how the hell stuff worked, or they were lying to us. And I don't want to believe either one of those. And yet we saw people still get sucked up in the Robinhood game, when clearly, even though Charles Schwab, not your buddy, Fidelity, not your buddy, Vanguard, not your buddy, just these name brand companies that have been around forever that we know are names that we probably can trust much more than a Robinhood.
I think what's interesting about the whole Robinhood phenomenon too is, and you know, tying back to these banks, is there's this whole movement of just trying to buck the system and trying to buck, you know, everything that we know to, I don't know, maybe be true, or, you know, maybe be one of these kind of old guards that might be more trustworthy for your money. There's this just sort of undertone lately that, you know, just keeps kind of ramping up and up of like, no, we have to buck the system. There has to be something different.
And actually, I don't think that's new. I mean, I think Robinhood's the new, but I think, you know, when I was born, I'm sure my parents were out there looking for the new at that time, and their parents, you know, who's got the better horse-drawn carriage at the time, or, you know, whatever the hot new thing is.
So let's talk about, Shauna, whether this should change consumer behavior, because I have to tell you, the viability of the bank was never something that I paid attention to. I was kind of like, is it close, right? Does it have the cheapest checking? Is it, you know, are the cash machines and ATMs close enough that I can deposit? We're going back now, of course, 10, 15 years. But should we actually be saying, okay, forget all those factors, is this bank viable when we're going to do our business?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm a big proponent of always asking questions. And I think that, you know, you're certainly within your realm of reason to ask those questions. And I think this, you know, what Joe was talking about is, you know, was trying to find the new, and is the new always as good as the old, you know, kind of guard that has been around? But I think, you know, it's really hard to answer that question, Jordan, because I don't know if we would ever get to the bottom as a consumer of, is this bank trustworthy? You know, we don't have access to the information, and a lot of this information doesn't come out until it's too late, till something like this has happened. So I think, you know, it's a good idea always to do an audit of, where is my money at? You know, do I feel comfortable with this? Have a little bit of a smell test. But I think it's really hard to make these decisions.
Speaking of the new, that brings us to headline number two. It's a bird. It's a train. No, it's just artificial intelligence here to save the day. In 2023, we have seen the rampant expansion of AI, which not only has driven our creative ventures, but has buoyed the stock market. The massive buzz around ChatGPT and similar forms of generative AI led companies to invest billions in the technology. Tech giants like Microsoft and Alphabet saw record stock gains as investors boarded the AI bandwagon. Perhaps the biggest winner, though, was chipmaker NVIDIA. In June, it became only the seventh U.S. company to be worth $1 trillion. Joe, how will AI affect the long-term market? Small question. Simple. In a few words, Joe.
I've got the answer to 87 questions and not that one. Like there's no way anybody knows where that thing ends. I mean, let's just look at what happened this year.
Bill Gates said early in the year that this is the biggest thing to happen to computing since the GUI interface, right? Which people that don't know what that is, that's the fact that you take your mouse and you can see all the little things on it. Like that made computing so much easier for so many people. And now your teenager can have a computer do all their homework, right? It's the very next phase of this. But look at how wide-ranging it was. I mean, from the Hollywood strikes, largely a big part of that was around the role of AI in the next movie or TV series we watch. Sarah Silverman with a huge lawsuit because, you know, protecting ChatGPT and other AIs using her voice to create automated jokes that are told with her voice. So does she own her voice? Is her voice public record? Like, who owns that? There was a guy in Germany in April, an editor of a German magazine that ran a quote interview with Formula One driver Michael Schumacher, who's one of the best drivers of all time. Michael Schumacher, I believe, cannot speak. He had a horrible disability. I believe he cannot speak. The whole thing was made up by AI. And so the editor sacked of this magazine. So we're seeing this is a much more transformative time in so many different fields than it's ever been. I mean, and we could even take AI to the next level. Look at what the auto unions were able to negotiate when it came to their working hours, mostly because of the effect of robots on building cars. So, you know, this idea of universal income, the idea of what are we going to do in the future, the idea of how safe is your job and how do we stay ahead of the curve? Man, I don't know where we're headed. When you've got names like Steve Wozniak and even Elon Musk saying we probably need to take a break and slow down. And we had the whole board of OpenAI lose their position because their position was we need to slow down. And 700 of the employees of OpenAI voted, no, we don't want to slow down. We're going to keep this train going. It's crazy. I don't know where. I seriously think we're in an exciting / scary time when it comes to AI and our careers.
Shauna, the big companies are investing in AI. Should we as individual investors, and how?
Gosh, that's a really great question. I don't have the answer to. I think that it's like Joe was saying, like, we don't know where this train's going. We know it's fast moving. You know, when you were talking about, you know, the actor strike. I was just thinking about, I was recently listening to a new Beatles song that came out where they used AI for John Lennon's voice. And so I think, you know, it's a really careful line that I don't think we know the boundary between the line yet of how we can use AI for the good and then how AI becomes something where it does. It takes over our jobs. It takes over our voice. You know, I mean, we could probably use AI right now to replicate all of our voices on this podcast. And so I think it's scary to think about what AI might replace. And I'm hoping that, you know, a lot of the excitement over AI has maybe dwindled a little bit. I know a lot of people who in my world were using AI for everything, for writing things, for, you know, everything from like creating menu planning. And I mean, using AI for everything and then saying like, wait a minute, I think maybe I want a little bit more human interaction in there. I want a little bit more control over things. So, you know, I'm hoping that we kind of get to a place where there is that sweet spot and we know the boundaries between, but I just don't know how long that's going to take.
I feel like the pushback on AI is definitely a real thing and a discussion that we're finally having, which has also led this year to a bigger discussion. I've never done so many episodes on burnout than I did this year. And I think what created this stream in the zeitgeist, at least the zeitgeist that I've been feeling around burnout, has a lot to do with the bigger thing around AI, which is just social media in general, about how social media has so changed the landscape. And I think people are looking at the rubble of the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years and going, what have we done? Like all this stuff that makes us more social has us feeling more isolated than we ever have before. We're trying to go faster, which is why we're going slower. We're afraid of ourselves. We're afraid of other people. We're afraid of not being good enough, right? So we don't communicate. I mean, there's these huge implications, and I'm glad we're finally this year, I feel like starting to pause and go, why am I so burnt out? What do I do with my day that creates that? And is AI going to actually make this any better?
Speaking about pausing and conversations that cause us burnout, let's get to headline number three, inflation. What inflation? The rate hikes just kept coming in the beginning of the year. In an attempt to fight inflation, the Federal Reserve raised interest rates 0.25 percentage points in each of its February, March, May, and July meetings. That made it for a streak of 11 consecutive rate hikes since March 2022, bringing the federal funds rate from 0.25% to 5.5% in the space of little over a year. The rates, however, were held steady in September and the November meetings. Could we see one more 25 basis point increase in December? Joe, another big question here. I know you're not an economist, but from where you sit, is the Fed doing a good job? I mean, is it doing the right thing?
That's above my pay grade. I mean, I'm a personal finance guy, so deal with the facts the way they are, not the way you hope that they will be or, you know, wish for. But I think the Fed has one mission, which is to, well, actually, I'll take that back. I think the Fed has two missions: to look at the heating up of the economy and the job market. So looking at just those two things. So inflation and jobs. And the problem the Fed had, I believe, is, and this might be giving them the benefit of the doubt for jacking up things so quickly, which has created a tidal wave in a lot of different, maybe not anticipated ways, is that I think the pandemic created a bunch of conditions we haven't seen before. And so when you've got an economy that's as weird as it is, with job numbers as good as they were, like, those two things don't usually go together. Yeah. And now we've got high interest rates, and we still in many sectors have a pretty okay job market. Not wonderful, but not horrible.
Yeah, it's not supposed to work that way.
It isn't supposed to work that way at all. So we're in a different place, but I do think, so I will take out my crystal ball because I think this one is fairly easy, which is, no, I don't think we're going to see any more interest rate raises. And I feel like not only our Fed chairman, but when you just see other Fed governors talk, that I think they're all signaling that we're kind of in a, well, let's see what mess we made mode, much more than let's raise it more mode. And I wish I knew what that meant. I mean, I wish I knew where we go. I don't know if bonds made your list, but we could talk about bonds as kind of an offshoot of this as well.
Shauna, obviously none of us have a crystal ball, but I find myself feeling a little bit better about inflation lately. How are you feeling? You think that we've kind of passed the worst of at least our recent inflation woes, or are you still questioning whether there's more to come?
I think that if I pull out my crystal ball as well, I would actually agree with Joe. You know, I think that we're in this
Don't agree with Joe. That's no fun. What do you mean agree with Joe?
I know, right? I know. I'll do
stop,
it.
Shauna, keep going. Stop.
I'll do
going.
It this
stop,
one time. I'll do it this one time. I do think, you know, we're in this moment of kind of flex of, you know, we might have climbed the mountain peak and now everybody's kind of looking around to see the damage that might have been done. And, you know, can we go down the mountain peak without doing more damage? I was just reading an article this morning, and I cannot quote who the economist was. I can't remember his name, but he had looked ahead and had seen that, or he was one of the first ones that predicted that we were kind of going to be at this, you know, 5.5% kind of Fed rate, and that mortgage rates were going to go up to about 8% kind of peak there. And now he's saying his prediction is that, you know, we're going to see the rates decline in 2024. And he predicts we're going to get somewhere around like a 3%-ish rate, somewhere around there in 2024. But he did say that, you know, he thinks it's still going to be a little bit of a rocky road to get there, because what you're both saying, we're kind of in uncharted territory. You know, things that were supposed to happen or correlate haven't really correlated the last few years. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen in 2024, but I really think we're going to see a little bit of a climb down that mountain.
Looking at the credit card numbers, Shauna, I don't know how you feel about this, but looking at credit card numbers, and we're seeing credit card balances climb. I think the average person doesn't get the inflation thing. Like that, like they heard it, they heard it on the news and they're still living their best life without thinking about the fact that I go to the grocery store and the effect of I'm spending $50 more on groceries than I was, you know, 6 months ago. Like I feel like our spending patterns haven't changed nearly enough for the inflation that we've had.
I think this high cost of living that a lot of us feel, we don't necessarily understand where it comes from, but we're still in kind of this place, I think, post-pandemic world where we're still like, you know, I want to go on the trips. I want to buy the things. I want to have the experiences, and I don't care what it costs me. I don't care if my credit card rates are higher. It doesn't have any feel, but then we feel the sting of it when we do go to get gas or we go to the grocery store or we try to buy something. But those two worlds aren't, those two worlds aren't correlating for us. It's like, I'm still going to do the things, even though I have this like immense pain when I go to the grocery store and it's $100 and I've gotten like five things.
It sounds like we're talking about things that aren't working the way they're supposed to, right? The Fed rates are going up and yet we're not seeing as much unemployment as we'd expect. Inflation is high, and yet we're not getting that negative pressure from people cutting down on their spending. Joe, you mentioned it very briefly, bonds, which did not make my list, but is true. It's also one of those things that isn't acting the way it's supposed to. What's going on there?
I don't know, because I, you know, as a safe place, I'll tell you, for a guy that's done this a long time, I've always had this love affair with Ginnie Mae's. I just always thought that Ginnie Mae is like that thing nobody ever looks at. So it was always a place where I could recommend, when I was a financial planner, I would recommend that people put money in Ginnie Mae's as kind of a safe second tier cash reserve. Holy crap, was that wrong? that was so bad in this economy. And I look at the bond market and I think it's this great reminder of, I saw a guy on Twitter last year talking about, you got to think long term. You got to look at Nvidia and Microsoft. Nvidia and Microsoft haven't been great long term. They've been great short term. Microsoft went through like a 14-year march of death where the stock did nothing for that whole time. They were like the Japanese economy. I mean, it was just absolutely such a horrible place to be. And Nvidia, I remember when Nvidia was like the laughing stock. And why are you investing in Nvidia? Your kid, you know, buying a bunch of video game contraptions? Is that why you're buying Nvidia? So I think that even when it comes to something, Doc, as boring as bonds, like realizing that what you believe to be true and that it can never go bad in an asset class, bad stuff, get forest fires can happen there too.
We are talking to Joe Salcihi and Shauna Game, and we are taking out our crystal balls to try to figure out what the top financial news of 2023 means to us today. We're going to take a short break. I'm Doc G, and this is the Earn and Invest podcast. All right, so most of us know the bad news already. If you were using Mint as a budgeting app, it has shut down. But the good news is there's something better, and it's called Monarch Money. I started using Monarch Money myself about 5 months ago, and I knew immediately that I liked it more than any other budgeting app I had ever used. For one, it focuses on collaboration. This is easy to share with your spouse, your partner, your financial advisor. And it's aspirational. Not only can you look at your current budget, but what do you want to buy? What do you want your goals to be? You can focus on those in Monarch Money. It's the next generation of personal finance apps. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Furthermore, you can create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/earn. Again, that's monarchmoney.com/EARN. What I like about this app is it's intuitive, easy to use, quick to sign on. It's collaborative, as we talked about. It's customizable. The idea is you can use this app the way you want to use it. And the reason why is the Monarch Money team is customer focused. They are focusing on you, me, and all the other people who want to use this app to live a better financial life. After trying out Monarch Money for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/earn. That's monarchmoney.com/earn for your extended 30-day free trial. You know what? I love our meals from Factor. My son started getting them about a year ago when he needed a quick alternative to meals on the go. But where we've really enjoyed them is we've been remodeling our kitchen. That's right, we've had no access to our kitchen for the last few weeks. And some nights, we just had no idea what to do for a meal. That is where Factor came in. We would just pop the meal in the microwave, and 2 minutes later, we'd have a fantastic meal. You can do the exact same thing, and there's tons of variety. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week. These are chef-prepared meals, and let me tell you, they are delicious. No fuss, no mess. You just put it in the microwave, and 2 minutes later, you have a meal. This is tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Head to factormeals.com/earn50 and use your code EARN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code EARN50 at factormeals.com/earn50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. We are back with Shauna Game. She is the host of the Everyone's Talking Money podcast, and Joe Saul Sehy, who is the author of Stacked, Your Super Serious Guide to Modern Money Management. And we are talking about the biggest headlines / financial news of 2023. And we are to headline number 4. Everything is good, right? According to the U.S. Treasury, the U.S. economy in 2023 outperformed expectations along three key dimensions: growing economic output, labor market resilience, and slowing inflation. Yet, when asked about the overall state of their personal finances, 34% of Americans said that they're either struggling or in crisis. Just over half of Americans, 51%, said that they were having difficulty paying their bills in the past 3 months, and 42% said the same thing about paying for food. Joe, why the disconnect? It's like everything's great and everything's horrible at the same time.
I think it's what Shauna and I were talking about earlier, which is that we still haven't seen the fallout. You know, the fallout we've seen, that I've seen so far, was what I mentioned earlier about burnout being in the zeitgeist. You got a lot of people running 1,000 miles an hour, and they need to keep going because their financial picture, they feel like, depends on it. The pace of work depends on it. And yet we're figuring out that we can't. But I don't think we've figured it out yet. I think this is a 2024 story that we see the other shoe begin to drop. You know, it's funny. We had the great resignation at first, where people said, you know, forget this crappy boss. Forget this person treating me like crap. And I felt like that was a great movement, because it taught employers that, no, maybe you do need to treat your people better. So I did feel like there was this movement, when you look at employment blogs, among employers to try to treat employees better, to do more for their employees. And yet it's a bigger thing than even that. It's the pace of our life. It's all the encroachment. It's the amount of time we're spending, you know, flipping through TikTok videos, doing all the stuff that doesn't line up with our values. I feel like this is kind of this is part one of a longer narrative that's playing out.
John, are we in the midst of a good economy or a bad economy? Because I just don't know.
I don't know either. I think this is what we're talking about, where things are just not lining up. It's funny. The last week, I had two friends kind of call me in a panic about, they just got laid off from their job, and they, you know, were sure that their job was secure. They'd been with these, you know, big companies for years and years and years, and it just kind of came out of the blue. They both said to me in very similar words, I don't understand, because everything seems to be going so well in the economy. Mm. And I just thought that was really interesting. And I started talking about a lot of the things that we're talking about now, sort of these big stories that have come out of 2023. And they said, well, yeah, but I don't really understand how any of that impacted me and my job. Like, how is that you know, lining up with me getting laid off. And so I think a lot of what Joe's saying too is like, we're maybe at another moment of kind of a you know, control all delete sort of reset, where we're now reshuffling through things, through our values, you know, what, you know, thinking about our money, what do we want it to do for us? We're kind of at this place again where things are getting shuffled up, and, you know, we don't know how to think or how to, you know, what to do about that.
Joe, it really brings us to headline five, which is recession. Are we there yet? I mean, we've already talked about the Fed rate hikes and inflation, but it's also notable that U.S. existing home sales dropped to a 13-year low in August, and rising credit card debt and delinquencies could be additional red flags that a slowdown in consumer spending may be right around the corner. In addition, the U.S. Treasury yield curve has been inverted since mid-2022, a historically strong recession indicator. I mean, Joe, are we doomed? I mean, it feels like, again, it feels like there's all this positive, and then everyone's like just bracing for that recession that's supposed to come.
Well, you know, it's funny. This is a case where, and this is sad because I love throwing Bank of America under the bus. They're my favorite target. When I was messing up with my money in the mid-90s, they were there as I was digging the hole with a bigger shovel to help me dig it harder and faster. So, but the Bank of America economist a couple of weeks ago said he thinks we sidestepped the recession. And I tend to believe that as well, because you know what'll happen is if we do get those numbers increasing, the Fed now has recharged their weapons to fight against these things. They have a lot of room now to move back down, and we will see the Federal Reserve move interest rates down again. Over the short run, 3 to 5 years, I think that's great. If we really look philosophically, talking about this is a philosophical podcast, we look philosophically at that. What does it mean? It means that we are a debtor country and people will open up the purse strings and they'll spend more money again, which isn't great for any of us individually. So great for the economy? Yeah. We'll pay less interest again? Yeah. People will get let off the hook again? Yeah. But long-term for each of us, I don't know. I still, you know, I feel this malaise, but I think when it comes to recession in the economy, I don't think we're going to, I hate saying this, but I think I agree with Bank of America.
Joe is looking a little sickly in the corner over there. I mean, Shauna, it's a good point. What it starts to look like, especially as Joe talks about this debtor economy, is the people who have money, who are wealthy, who have lots of assets and equities are really going to do well. Whereas the people who are kind of using that debt to subsist, it makes you wonder if we're going in the right direction. Is dropping the interest rates long-term good for everybody? It's certainly good for the short-term economy. And I would argue it's good for those of us who have lots of assets invested. Is it good for everyone?
I don't know. I don't know if we can say anything is ever good for everyone. I mean, you're right. You know, people who are wealthy and have a lot of money, they definitely benefit from these swings. I think if lowering the interest rates helps, you know, with some job losses, if it helps people in the housing market and things like that. And overall, I think it's just the sentiment, right? Because most people don't understand the underbelly of any of these things that we're necessarily talking about. And we're not economists here. We, you know, that's not our job to kind of dig around in that. But, you know, I think if people have this sense of, oh, okay, the headlines are now we're out of a recession, or recession is going to happen, interest rates are lowering, like things must be good. You know, I think that that just brings an overall sense of happiness to people. And, you know, I think that I again, I'm going to sound like a broken record, but I think I agree with Joe, who agrees with Bank of America. That's a, I can't believe I'm saying that sentence, but I agree. I think we have sidestepped. And I think it's interesting because, you know, last year we were talking about recession, and on my show this year, we've talked about recession. You know, it's like a broken record too. Is this thing actually happening? And I think people have become a bit numb to this idea of recession too. Like, I've heard about it so long. This thing's either happening or it's not happening. And I'm just not even going to care which way. You know, if I have my job and if I'm able to go out and spend money, those are the only things I care about.
So I wanted to lighten things up a little bit for headline 6 and 7. We're going to get into a bunch of personal finance geekiness, so hold on tight. Headline 6 is Super Nerds Unite Against Dave Ramsey's 8% Safe Withdrawal Rate Guidance. Ramsey's math is simple. I quote the wizard here. If you're making 12% in good mutual funds and inflation for the last 80 years is 4%, if you make 12 and you need to leave 4% in there for average inflation rates, that leaves you 8. So I'm perfectly comfortable drawing 8. But if you want to be a little bit conservative, 7. But for sure, not 3 or 5. Unfortunately, this math is just plain wrong. Joe, has Dave gone mad? What's going on?
I mean, the math checks. If you get 12 and if inflation is 4,
you got 8 left.
It's not that simple, Joe, right? Come on. Tell me it's not that simple.
Pretty simple. I think there's two things going on. I think Dave Ramsey and his 12% rant, which he's done forever, and he's heard pushback on forever. I think this is just a marketing thing. I think that's fine. And I think it keeps him in the news, keeps people upset with him, which makes more people listen, which drives advertising rates up, which, you know, is heaven for the Ramsey organization. And people will learn on their own that they're not going to get 12. And who does it really hurt? If you're going to save more money because you're convinced that the stock market will actually provide something for you, which it does. Okay, that's great. In this case, I think we all went off the deep end because of the fact that this advice actually hurts somebody. Now, there is another game where I agree with him, which is there's a bunch of prophets of doom out there who are always telling you don't spend any money because you're going to need some for later. And then people die and they don't spend money. That always drove me crazy when I was a financial planner. People afraid of this darkness that was never going to come, or the vast probability was that it wasn't, or people that won't save because they think it's going into a black hole, right? So that part I agree with. But for the average person hearing that, going, I can take 8% of my money out, I feel as bad for those people as I do people that want to retire at 30 years old and live in a tent the rest of their life thinking that sustains them. You know, I mean, the part of the FIRE movement that drives me crazy is the piece that I'm going to check out way too soon and barely have enough money. And hopefully everything works out right. In this case, there's no way in hell it works out right. Like if you retire and you take 8% out of your portfolio every year, you will run out of money, period, full stop. No, it is so frustrating to hear the man who the larger public sees as one of the two or three most respected, most listened to names in America saying something that is that patently horrible for so many people.
Shauna, was it an overreaction or an underreaction from the personal finance community about what Dave said?
I certainly don't think it was an underreaction. I mean, like Joe said, we've heard this over and over again. This, you know, the numbers that he quotes, these are not new numbers. They're, it's almost like, yeah, you expect him to say,
crazy stuff.
Yeah, this is what you expect. And I agree. This is his marketing machine. This is how it works. This is what keeps him in a headline. And so it's kind of a double-edged sword because here we are talking about him. And, promoting this message again. I had Joe and Paula Pant on my show recently, and we kind of dissected this message as well. But, you know, I think the majority of people out there do not hire a financial planner, right? They don't have access to somebody looking at their numbers, creating a realistic retirement projection for them. And so, you know, they use something that Dave says as the rule, as kind of the law. And I think, you know, we all know this, but anytime somebody says something black and white when it comes to personal finance, you automatically should think that is not truth, right? There's personal finance exists in gray area. This is, you know, it's very personal. It's unique to each person. And so blanketing a statement like that, I think it's very dangerous because there are a lot of people out there that are just going to kind of rest on that laurel and, not question it.
This is what's frustrating for me. We all went crazy. We all had positions. We all talked about it. It's still our little tiny fishbowl. There's still, when you take a look at all the people listening to financial content in the United States, 330 some million people in the United States, there's maybe 12 to 20 million people listening to financial stuff. The bad news is that you could take all of us together and his audience is going to comprise a quarter of it, of that thing, maybe a fifth, you know? So a lot of people are not going to hear the message of all of us, which is why anybody, you know, whenever anybody tells me, they're like, well, I don't know if I'm going to start a new blog, or I'm going to start financial writing, or I'm going to write my book or do my podcast, whatever. I'm like, please God, do, because we need more voices. Like, we need more people bringing creative stuff to this space so that the word gets out. I love the fact that we can each be each other's compliance officer in some ways. You know, a lot of people don't know what compliance is, but in the financial universe of professionals, they have these compliance people that say what you should be able to say and what you can't. There's no compliance officer for this space. So I felt like in this case, we were all Dave's compliance officer, but different than my compliance officer when I was a financial planner who would just completely throttle me. I feel like we still didn't throttle the Dave monster. Like, there's going to be another one. He's going to do this again.
Do people care though? Do they care though? That's my, you know, I think my takeaway is I don't think it matters to most people who listen to him, who are loyal followers. For some reason, they love the way he does things. They love the way he, you know, criticizes people. They love the headlines.
There's a guy named Michael McQueen, a wonderful Australian speaker who has a new book coming out called Mindstruck that I've been happy that I've been able to preview. And Michael says that part of the problem, getting back to social media, is that we don't have a growth mindset. We make a decision right away, often based on our gut and the people who were around, what our identity is. So if I am a quote Dave Ramsey follower, and Dave says something, and you question that thing, we're not going to question the logic. We're going to question, why the hell are you questioning Dave Ramsey? Exactly. Which is what social media has taught us to do. We're increasingly on these stupid, you know, I'm going to call them football teams or these sports teams. Instead of it being our life and we're thinking about ideas, I'm on team this or team that, and whatever that team believes, I'm going to take this ridiculous position. And it's so frustrating to see that so many of us, to use Michael McQueen's phrase from his new book, so many of us are mind stuck because we feel this need to defend our position rather than to think, where could I be wrong?
Speaking of defending your position, I'm going to give you, Joe, and also Sean a chance to tell us what you think the biggest headline was of 2023. But before that, we should get to headline 7. You might need to budget, but you will have to pay for it. Budgeting app Mint is shutting down to the disappointment of loyal users, causing fellow app makers to declare, "This is the peril of relying on free services." Unfortunately, despite its success and substantial user base, Intuit announced in October that the app will shut down as of January 1st, 2024. Shauna, are the days of the free budgeting and free fintech versions of these apps, are those days over? Are we going to have to pay for this stuff now?
I think so, unfortunately. I think the answer is yes. You know, I love that a lot of us out there are talking about how you can do budgeting in a free way, right? How you can create your own, how you can create an easy system without having to use an app. But I think that, you know, it was interesting. I read an article that said, that one of the reasons why Mint was okay going away was they were saying that, you know, not a lot of people these days are using budgeting apps. So they didn't even think it was, you know, worthy of them to keep Mint going. Of course, I know it's probably not that simple. And I would be really interested in seeing those data points. I had a lot of people kind of up in arms emailing me about what do they do? Where do they go now? What happens to their data and all this kind of information that they've had, you know, stored in Mint for years? And I know a lot of the paid apps now are kind of, you know, scrambling to make sure that customers have a way to import data, of course, at a price, right? I think it's just, unfortunately, this is the kind of the world, you know, we're in. I mean, I you know, cut my cable years ago, right, to use all the different, you know, streaming apps. And now I'm paying way more if I had just kept my cable, you know, and I'm sort of over here just like laughing at myself. And they keep increasing their prices over and over again. It's like, what are you going to do? You know, so I think it's part of this kind of subscription membership model world that we exist in now.
Wouldn't it be cool, Sean, if somebody bundled all those apps together so you could watch them all on like platform? Wouldn't that be?
That'd be amazing.
Man, if somebody ever thought of
fantastic.
That.
Fantastic.
That'd be so wild. You know, what I love about paid apps, what I love about it is that my problem with Mint was every time that I would click on Mint, I was being marketed. So I was not Mint's, I wasn't using the product as much as I was being used as a way
marketing,
for them to generate revenue. So when I pay, I should then have a big right to complain if I'm being used as marketing. And I should, back to Shauna, loving asking questions. That's one of the first questions is, what are you doing with my information? How else are you making money? What I like about some of these, the paid apps, or most of the paid apps out there, is that I know that they're being paid. I know how they're being paid, and I can see the direct result of that. The second thing I like is that this was a big aha for me that I had in my late 20s, because I used to love free stuff. And I realized when I would use free products, I would never fully use them. I would never fully embrace them. I felt like they could be a buffet. I could use the piece that I liked, I didn't like. You know, when I pay for stuff, I feel compelled that I have to use it because I paid for it, right? Or I let it go. So what I love about paying for an app is it puts some of my money behind my actions that I will use this on an ongoing basis.
Well, those were my top 7 financial headlines. Shauna, what did we miss? Anything on your list we didn't talk about?
Yeah, I would say, you know, student loan forgiveness, you know, kind of being wiped away. And we've got now the, you know, payment pause has ended. And I think a lot of people are looking at their student loans and, you know, back to that like very strong pay point of, I can't believe that I'm in the mess that I'm in. I got an education and, you know, now I have this massive payment, or, you know, I have to now figure out kind of these new plans and what new plan I need to be on. But I think, you know, what I'm hearing from a lot of my community is back in the place of, even if they're on a payment plan where they have a low monthly payment, it's that pain that they're feeling again from having the student loans, from not being forgiven, and from, you know, kind of looking forward to their future and thinking about, how do I balance these massive student loans with the other money goals I have, let alone saving for retirement? And I think it's just become kind of an overwhelming place again that, you know, most people were able to escape a little bit the last couple of years.
Well, and who thought that would happen at the same time the interest rates are notching up, right? You've got inflation going up at the same. It was totally the perfect storm. And I feel like while we did see debt levels go down a lot, and a lot of people did very responsible things with their money during the pandemic, which I totally cheered. I have more faith in humanity during the pandemic and seeing what a lot of people were doing with their money than I think I've ever had my entire life. But I still think there was a percentage of the population, to quote comedian Brian Regan, who woke up and went, oh, the science project due tomorrow. I've had 4 months to work on it and I've done nothing, right? We knew.
I mean, that's my favorite way to do things, right?
Right? We knew this day was coming for how long? It got delayed for how long? And so, well, like everybody else, when the Supreme Court told the administration, nope, we are moving forward and repayments are going to start, I groaned like everybody else did, because you knew that that was finally going to happen. It had to happen sooner or later. We had to be ready for it.
Joe, other big headlines, either your favorites or ones we missed.
There's
he had us a list of 100.
How much time do we have, right?
Well, let's talk about the big one, right? Okay. Which is that when hopefully this is so fun. I had so much fun doing this last year. I had so much fun doing it this year. If we're sitting here this time next year talking about this, you know what we're talking about. The crazy, crazy election year. And the circus was wilder already with a year to go than it's ever. And I say this every election. It was wilder this time than it ever was. Here we have, let's talk about the two candidates that are winning. We've got on the Democrat side, even though he's not much older than the Republican front runner, every time he comes out, he looks like he's 190 years old and he talks like he's 190 years old and he loses his place. And you know what? Increasingly, when you look at presidents that left a big mark, it's to be whether you agree with what Joe Biden did or not, it's to be a voice, a speak pipe, to be this. And I watching that guy talk for the next 4 years, I can't figure out what Democrats are doing, not going, hey, Joe, maybe we've had enough. On the other side,
the alternative,
on the other side, we've got the biggest clown show going on with a dude who's being prosecuted in how many different courts?
Like, and people don't care.
Yeah, at least one of them has to be right, right? At least one of them has to be right.
It is amazing. We saw at the end of my street, and this is not at all an endorsement, but at the end of my street, I live in a very conservative town on the border of Texas and Arkansas, traditionally a very conservative area. I saw at the end of my street last week, somebody had a Nikki Haley for president sign. And I was like, oh my God, we have one person. We have one person who might be a little bit of a thinker. And that's not a Nikki Haley endorsement. That's just, we have these two people that are the front runners. And it's just, oh, it's such a train wreck. And I just, it means the next year, if you're not ready for the circus to come to town, you need to fortify yourself today, because it's going to get worse.
Buckle up.
Yeah, I think it's a great place to end this episode of warning about the circus coming into town, because it most definitely
more.
Will. 18 more. Yeah, Joe, we don't got time for all 18 of those. I'm sorry.
We didn't talk about Taylor Swift.
You know, she's a billionaire.
Taylor Swift.
You know, she's a billionaire. Oh, well, we all can't be as successful as Taylor Swift, but hopefully after listening to these at least 7 top financial stories, you will do better with your money. Thank you so much, John. Thank you so much, Joe and Shauna. Shauna, if people want to reach out to you or have questions, what's the easiest way to get in touch with you?
You can find my show, Everyone's Talking Money, on any podcast player. You can also find me on Instagram at Shauna Game, and I would love to dive deeper into these topics with you.
And Joe, if for any strange reason anyone wants to ask you questions or get in contact with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Hey, the number one thing on my list that happened this year was we created a real estate show called Stacking Deeds. It's a lot of fun with our buddy Crystal Hammond, and it's every Tuesday. If you're at all thinking about real estate investing, it's made for people that are just trying to get started. So head to Stacking Deeds, wherever you're listening, to earn and invest.
Joe Salcihi and Shauna Game, thank you so much for being on Earn and Invest today.
Thanks, you.
Man. That's a wrap. Earn and Invest is now part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to this show as well as other fine podcasts. So we just spent this episode talking to Joe Salcihi and Shauna Game about the biggest financial headlines / stories of 2023. I want to take a few moments to talk about my biggest financial headlines of 2023. These are my personal headlines, what I learned this year above and beyond what was happening in the world. I can think of 3 big things that changed for me this year and has changed the way I look at my own finances. First and foremost, number one, my big financial personal headline was the cost of assisted living. My father-in-law got sick this year. He ended up in the hospital, eventually had to go to an assisted living for a while, and now is home with a caregiver. And it was a good reminder of how much care costs as you get older. We're not talking small amounts. They have a lot of money saved up, and yet this idea that it might cost $150,000, $200,000 a year just to take care of him was a little bit of a splash in the face. It's not that I didn't intellectually know how expensive it is as you get older, how much it can cost to take care of you, especially as your needs go up. But it's no joke. And especially where I live, I live in a high cost of living area, and so the cost of care really, really is high. So you might think, hey, I'm doing great. I have seven figures saved up. I have over $1 million. But man, if you get stuck in assisted or skilled care for 3, 5, 7 years, that's going to drain seven figures very, very quickly. So that was kind of my first big financial headline of 2023. My second one was that money doesn't cover everything. This year was a big transitional year for my family. We sent my son to college, and the truth of the matter is, he had a really tough time for a semester, and there was nothing I could do about it, nothing that money would solve. He got sick with a number of colds, was out of school for a bunch of weeks, had some really challenging classes. And it was hard for us because he was away and we couldn't provide the support we normally do. And it really drove home this idea that money solves some problems, but it certainly doesn't solve all of life's problems. I found myself burdened, worried, concerned, stressed about what was going on with him. And we talk a lot about how money fixes things, but money couldn't fix this. I mean, I could hire him a tutor. I could make sure he went to the most expensive doctors. I could do all those kind of things, but it didn't really relieve the stress. And so if you think that money is going to solve all your problems, at least in my case, this year really drove home that it doesn't. And I think then the last big financial headline for me in 2023 was, even after all this time, I still am not comfortable spending money. We've been financially independent for a long time, but we don't usually spend exorbitantly, at least all at once. I mean, we probably have a pretty high yearly spend compared to most people. But this year we decided to remodel our kitchen and our bathrooms, and it's going to cost a lot of money. More, for instance, than some people pay for a house itself. And I know the money is there and I know we have it saved up, but I have to tell you, it doesn't sit comfortably with me. And you would think after all these years of being a financial podcaster, it would, but it doesn't. I mean, I had to do something I've never done before in my life. We actually cashed out some stock shares. My wife had gotten some from her work as bonuses. And this is the first time that I've actually cashed out equities to pay for something. So we've always had equities and we've sold in order to buy other equities, or we've sold to balance our asset allocation. But this is the first time ever that we sold equities in order to pay for something. I'm 50 years old and I have to tell you, it doesn't feel amazingly comfortable. Even if I can philosophically explain it away, even if I could tell myself that we have plenty of money and that's the purpose of money, etc., it still feels uncomfortable. So those were my personal three big headlines for 2023. One, the cost of assisted or skilled care really is a real problem here in the United States. And if you haven't faced it yourself, you're in for a surprise. Even if you can intellectually talk about it, that doesn't mean you're going to like how it feels when it happens. Two, money can't solve all problems. Some things just require your time, your energy, and your love, and other things, and money unfortunately can't fix them. And then my last headline, headline number three, is even after all these years, I still don't love spending money. That's what I learned in 2023, and I'm wondering what all you learned. Please write me, leave a voice message, let me know what you learned. What were your biggest headlines in 2023?
Awesome. You know my favorite. Oh yeah.
Go ahead. After show start. Whatever your favorite. Go ahead.
Okay, so this is something I missed. Listen, you guys are gonna love this one. July 10th of this year.
That was my birthday.
July 10th.
Oh really? Yes. Mine's is July really? 6th.
Yeah. Wow. No, losers
I turned 50. I turned 50. That's the biggest news of the whole year.
That was the biggest money.
It was July 10th. No, you can't beat that, Joe.
That is. Well, apparently this guy wanted your birthday off because they found this writing from the 14th century. It's this 14th century document from a civil servant asking for time off. So even in the 14th century, you had to beg your boss for time off. Based on the handwriting, this is really kick-ass. They concluded
it was none other than Geoffrey Chaucer. It was Chaucer asking his boss for time off, apparently to go on a pilgrimage or something, you know? Is that cool? I just think that stuff's so neat.
That's great.
I was about to say, where did you find these headlines here, Joe?
Right?
Like, where did you
what
dig
do you
into
read
this?
Every day? Yeah.
I take one of us preps. I'm just saying. I'm just not that you guys didn't do okay, but one of us preps.
I was, Mm-hmm. Anyway, getting away from that, are you guys optimistic? Are you feeling optimism? I always like to ask that question at the end of these episodes.
I don't know. I think so. I don't know. I'm not prepared for 2024, though. I'm not prepared for all the election nonsense and just, you know, it's going to be so much noise. Like, it's hard to get through the noise. I'm not excited about that.
I'm an optimistic person. I'm optimistic for me that I'll be okay, but I'm not optimistic for the world. I don't know. Maybe the burnout, you know, I don't feel burnout. I feel invigorated and happy and whatever, but I can feel the larger burnout thing. So maybe there is something in there that's me, but I don't feel like that's going to get better next year.
You know,
I just feel like we're going to get even more.
You know, what's kind of weird that I think a lot about too is something that downstream effect of having kind of like a big election like this and all the craziness is people who produce things and are rolling things out anywhere near that time are just going to be lost. Like if you're starting a course, if you're starting a new venture, if you're doing anything that needs some attention to get it going,
forget it.
You might as well cancel out most of 2024, certainly the last half of 2024.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't imagine. I remember back, so, you know, we do this Magic 8-Ball episode every year where Len Penzo takes out this Walmart 8-Ball and shakes it. And I remember in 2016 in January that somebody asked if Donald Trump would be president. And at that time, he was like a joke, right? Running. It was early. It was before New Hampshire and all that. And it said, yes. And we all laughed and we're like, that thing is so stupid.
That will never happen. Please don't shake the Magic 8-Ball again. Please don't. I don't want to know.
Well, hopefully maybe something similar will happen. We'll have somebody come out of the blue, some savior come from, nowhere.
I feel like it's already written in the tea leaves, right? Don't they have those guys who do the predictions who have the set of questions? And they're almost always right based on how those questions are answered, like what's happening with the economy. And like, there's a series of like, whatever, six or seven questions. And based on them, they've used it to predict the president for the last six or seven presidential elections. And they said Biden was going to win. They said that Trump was going to win. So
who they say is going to win now?
I don't know if they've done the questions yet, but I think they need to be closer to the election. But things like the economy matter, right? So like things like being a repeat president matters, things like the economy matter, things like the stock market matter, et cetera. So these have these series of questions which tend to transcend the people, interestingly enough. So, you know, maybe is with all the chaos, there may still be some kind of general trend that goes based on just how the world is doing. But
want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.